Ready?
Yeah.
Welcome to Book Club for Movies, everybody. It's September 13th. I'm Ryan Miller, and he's going to do what they say can't be done. It's Matt Amber.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. We're back. We're at PAX. Thanks for sticking around. I hope you enjoyed your time away from us. We're back to provide you with more movies, more book clubs. We're here. We got it all. I got two movies for you this week, too. What do you?
I'm glad. Oh, whoa.
How many?
Do
you have movies this week, or is this just a one-sided deal?
Do I have movies this week? Okay, let me count them off real quick. Again, we're horse before the cart here. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 movies that are basically going to be two. Yeah, and I hinted at this during one of the PAX shows. But hey, this is Book Club for Movies. We watch one movie every week, just one. Don't get overwhelmed at this point. And then we talk about that one movie. The other stuff is just gravy, if you think about it.
It is. It's like a turkey gravy, though.
It is. Wait, whoa. Are you taking turkey gravy over beef gravy? Is this what I'm learning right now?
I'm not taking it. I'm saying that's just what it's like.
Well, I like turkey gravy, but you give me, like, let's put it this way. Every time I go to Hometown Buffet, I can have either or, and I have not chosen turkey gravy yet.
I mean, I don't know. Where are you at on mushroom gravy?
Ooh, we'll see. Okay.
See, because I'm going to take mushroom gravy probably over all of them.
All right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Sure. All right. Book Club for Movies, everybody. This week, in fact, we're going to pull a bit of a left turn or a U-turn or kind of maybe a J-turn.
There is a turn here.
There's a bunch. In fact, I don't even remember what movie we said we were going to do this week.
Oh, I'm on top of that. I've got it.
What movie did we say we were going to do this week?
Oh, this week?
Yeah, what were we going to? Remember, we said we were going to do a different movie.
Oh, I don't know.
And then we're switching gears.
Yeah, I have no idea.
All right. Well, this week, in honor of the late, great Mr. Burt Reynolds, passed away September 6th, we've, like I said, switched gears, made a left turn. We're doing Smokey and the Bandit this week. So, in honor of the Bandit himself, here is probably some sort of synopsis from Matt, because we do that.
I didn't watch it yet.
What?
I was for next week. Like, for actually this week, that was the game.
Oh.
Because we were gone. Like, I had no intention. That's funny. Oh, this show is going to be awesome. You're going to have all sorts of information. I haven't watched Smokey and the Bandit in probably 20 years.
Wait. What did you watch?
Movies
I'm keeping this all in, by the way. What did you watch for the show this week?
Oh, I got a couple of other random movies that are completely unrelated because we didn't have this, like, settled down. I wanted people to get involved on this one.
Well, but I thought three weeks ago, when we said we were taking some time off to go to PAX, we gave them a movie to watch. Do you remember what it was?
I don't. Not okay. Even a little bit. I'm guessing I watched it.
You're not going to actually make me go back and listen to the other podcasts, are you?
I might.
Okay, so apparently during the show, it was Get Out, The Last Starfighter, or The Isle of Dogs was my contribution. And we settled on Get Out. We didn't mention it again at the end of the show, but we did say it in the middle, so...
Well, then it doesn't count. It doesn't count.
Okay, maybe that's what happened. Yeah, all right.
It doesn't count.
Well, what do you want to do then? Because I don't want to do... Again, I'm keeping this all in, because if we don't do a show this week, this is what's going out instead. It's been 20 years since you've seen Smokey and the Bandit. Mm. I don't want to phone one in for the Bandit here, you know, especially if we're doing one in memoriam of the great man himself.
This was just a whole lot of miscommunication, because I meant we would do it today as this week's episode for, like, other people to come watch, and we talk about it next week.
So do we want to give this give people another week?
Yes! I want another week! I want to watch it!
Okay, all right.
Smokey the Bandit, streaming on Amazon. Go watch it.
You know what we can do? I can offload all my junk. You can offload all your junk, and we'll come back to the slate clean next week.
Let's do some junk offloading.
The rest of the show.
That's perfect. Perfect.
The rest of the show as the entire show.
Good. All right.
What movies did you watch these past... Has it been three total weeks, I think, right? Since we've...
It's been something. I've watched a lot. I didn't write down all of them. I only wrote down the three that I'm gonna hit you with. I was gonna two, and I remembered one.
Playing fast and loose, this one you can do. Just you can make movies up at this point. You'd be like, oh, I saw Revenge of the Nerds 7.
I would not do that ever.
Okay. Let's not make any promises.
I could. I won't. After Revenge of the Nerds 2, like, it's too far downhill. Even that, at this point, those movies are so weird. I don't know.
Revenge of the Nerds 2, too far downhill.
Yeah, Nerds in Paradise. So the first movie was a movie called Downrange. Came in an hour and 30 minutes, written by Ryui Kitamura and Joey O'Brien. Directed also by Ryui Kitamura, who I like, especially from, he did The Midnight Meat Train. And another movie called No One Lives. Really like this guy. Stars Kelly Conair, Stephanie Pearson, Rod Hernandez.
Wait, Kelly's last name is Conair?
Conair. Yeah. She's basically related to Nick Gage.
America's Treasure.
Yeah, that's her. This is not a great movie. It's certainly not his top tier stuff. This is sitting on Shudder right now. It's a group of kids that are doing like a ride share thing. They don't know each other. Everybody's pitching in money to get from point A to point B. Their tire gets blown out, so they've got to fix the car. They're replacing the tire. It takes them the opening shot of the movie is the tire getting blown out. It takes them like 15 minutes to get to the point where they're putting on the tire. And during all of this, it's like they're acting like they either don't know what a tire is, how it goes on, what they should be doing. Like, the dialogue is really...
I like the premise.
The dialogue for this is really, it's not strong. And it was very disheartening. Then it picks up when they find out that the tire was shot out. And there's a sniper somewhere that kills like three of them right off the bat. And then it becomes this weird cat and mouse game of three kids behind the car, another kid that's behind a tree log that's like a fallen down tree, and then the sniper. And there is a whole lot of what the hell, why did that happen? But it didn't happen there. Like my favorite one being
like
this guy
in the movie.
Yeah.
Or you watched it and were like, what the hell, why didn't that happen?
No, all of it. My favorite movie logic scene here, and this is how I knew this movie was a movie, was the sniper takes a couple of shots at them while they're behind the car, and the bullets are going through the door, like you can see the bullet holes.
Okay.
And yet those bullets are not piercing a hollow log that the other guy is sitting on the other side of. All right. It had a couple of really good gore effects to it. Those were fun. But yeah, I was disappointed. This movie was not as... It had potential, and it does have some good moments. The tension when they like figure out where he is and how they're figuring out where he's at, and then behind the car, you know, the standoff thing is cool, but it's just not executed very well. And ultimately, I think the dialogue in it was just really poorly written, put together, poorly written.
Yeah, gotcha.
Too bad. So then I wanted to watch a movie that had a lot of dialogue, was very going to be super easy to understand, like very point A to point B. So I was like, oh, who else to watch other than Jim Jarmusch? Makes perfect sense.
Oh, wow.
So apropos
of our quick Jarmusch discussion down the street in Seattle, or what?
It kind of came up. So we watched Only Lovers Left Alive, which... It's a movie Beth has been wanting to see for a long while. It's got, it's 2 hours and 3 minutes, written and directed by Jarmusch, starring Tilda Swinton, Tom Hiddleston, and Mia Wasikowska.
Wow.
Great cast. It's a Jarmusch movie. So if you like Jarmusch, you might like this movie. Don't like Jarmusch? No, I'm not going to like this movie. I'm kind of two minds with the guy. He's either real hit or real miss for me. This was pretty much in that miss category, which sucks because... Yeah. Love Tilda Swinton, love Tom Hiddleston, love Mia Wasikowska, but this just didn't work for me at all. The conceit of the movie is Tom Hiddleston is they're all vampires. He's an aging rock star that is super...
Whoa. Did you just say they're all vampires?
Yes, they're all vampires.
Like, they're... Okay. All right.
Yeah, no, they're vampires.
Okay, this is
Hiddleston and Swinton.
I'm still having a hard time processing this.
It makes perfect sense when you see it too. Okay. Hiddleston and Swinton were lovers for a long time. Mia Wasikowska is Tilda Swinton's sister, also a vampire. He's depressed. He's a miserable rock star who hates the music he's making, and he's just not happy. And the movie is kind of this plotting thing about him coming to grips with depression and then falling back in love with with his lover, with Tilda Swinton, after this weird meeting with her sister, that is, and she's like clearly, like she's a young vampire being a teenager, basically.
And, okay, you could have given me that description first, and I would have told you it was a Jim Jarmusch movie.
Yes,
but why are they vampires? Like, okay,
it's Jim Jarmusch. Why are they anything?
Well, that's almost my question. Like, Jim, okay, my past with Jim Jarmusch, he very much had, wow, is he hard to talk about. I was going to say he was in vogue when I was in film school, but
he was never
that's
in vogue.
Not descriptive of Jim Jarmusch in any way. Yeah. I mean, I watched Ghost Dog and was an assignment in film school.
Yeah, because Ghost Dog's amazing.
Well, and Coffee and Cigarettes came out.
Great
very
movie.
Different, but still. Vampires, like why if he made them vampires, assuming he's still writing and directing his own stuff.
He wrote and directed this, but it's an adaptation from something else, so I don't think it, but I mean when it comes to Jarmusch and the vampires, I mean, I think that screams out Jarmusch to me. Like, it's such an obvious thing for him, that the holding on to youth is something that he loves dinging on and screaming about. Even when he was a kid, he was like, I hate kids, you know, like we all we do is hold on to everything. We don't let anything go. We're not a part of the ether. We are the ether. Yeah, whatever.
I'm Jim Jarmusch, which was the tagline for our Jim Jarmusch discussion.
That's pretty much anything you can think of. Why did you do that? Yeah. I'm Jim Jarmusch.
Jim Jarmusch, here you go.
Like I said, I mean, the movie was not without its qualities and stuff. Like, it looks great. I think that Hiddleston and Swinton did great jobs. It just was not like it's a movie that just it's Jim Jarmusch, man.
It's
and it
Jim
just,
Jarmusch, man. It just, what do you say? Jim Jarmusch made a Bill Murray movie where you kind of liked it and you still love Bill Murray, but at the end we're like,
you're like,
okay,
why did I do this to myself?
Like, how do you do that with a Bill Murray movie? Like, nobody can do that with a Bill Murray movie.
Yeah, Jim Jarmusch can manage it.
I'm Jim Jarmusch.
Yeah, it's welcome to our show. So it wasn't my favorite movie. But it also exists. So, Jim Jarmusch.
Wow. Did you watch anything you enjoyed this week?
I did, in fact, watch something I very much so enjoyed.
Say the best for last?
What with the whole Spider-Man video game releasing, I felt...
Oh, right.
I felt like, okay, it's finally time I put on this subpar sequel to the Sam Raimi films starring clearly not Tobey Maguire. I watched Spider-Man Homecoming. Came in at 2 hours and 13 minutes, written by every single person in Hollywood. Distilled down to these few people: Jonathan Goldstein, John Francis Daly, John Watts, Christopher Ford, Chris McKenna, and Eric Summers. Directed by John Watts, starring Tom Holland, Michael Keaton, Robert Downey Jr., Marissa Tomei, John Favreau, Zendaya, and Jacob Batalon.
But you're not kidding in that the committee that must have got together to make this thing, this cooperation that was never going to happen between Sony and Marvel, for this movie to, I'm assuming a lot here, be as freaking good as it is.
Outrageously, by factors of tens, easily the best Spider-Man movie. And yeah. Yes, I'm putting it over Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm with you.
Spider-Man 2, really high quality. I love that movie.
Amazing.
This is a better movie. This movie is an embarrassment of riches at a time when Spider-Man was at his lowest, in my opinion, because
everything that was stacked up against that movie,
everything,
the amazing Spider-Man movies,
you had the two middling Andrew Garfield movies, you have the final Sam Raimi movie, which in retrospect I still don't think is as bad as people say, but it's not good.
Well, retrospectively, after the Amazing Spider-Man, like, that was my first statement after the Amazing Spider-Man movies, was, man, do you remember when Spider-Man 3 was the worst Spider-Man?
Yeah, exactly.
Those were the days, man.
And then you had this hope that, okay, he's gonna get one shot to be great in Civil War. Are we going to get that introduction? Is he going to be great? Is it going to hit? And I don't know. I don't know who cast Tom Holland. I don't know where he came from. He's a dancer, and he is perfect. That kid is,
and he does the dance beautifully.
He's perfect. He's perfect as Parker. Like he totally pulls off the I'm a total nerd bomber. I'm a geeky guy. I'm not super smooth. He pulls off the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and I absolutely loved the way they work that in, that Tony right? line of, come on, can't you just be, you know, the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man? Like
the my favorite line from that line of thought is, do a backflip.
He's
going around the neighborhood, he sees a guy that's just sitting there, do a backflip.
It was great. He pulled off, you know look, the name Homecoming was, I want to, whoever the hell subtitled that, what a title. They knew what they were doing with it, because they had to know. They had to know that, man, this script, they're like, they got it. We got it. This is it. We got it. You know, not only does the movie immediately give you backstory and reasoning for Keaton, which great, great reasoning for the Vulture to not only be the Vulture, you know, the guy who picks apart the scraps. That's literally what he does. Awesome. Great. I'm totally into
freaking
that.
Freaking blue collar dude.
Giving him that full on reasoning behind it, letting Keaton just like, there's nothing bad to be said about this movie for me. It really was just top to bottom, a ton of fun. If I had to quarrel and make quibbles about it, it probably is going to fall along the lines of the love interest situation, and just that
it's all set up.
It wasn't that's again, and it's a minor quibble. It's part of the high school experience, and they're doing that. It's part of Peter coming to grips with the fact that Spider-Man is a part of him, but it's not all of him. And he, you know, he also exists as a, right. as a valid person. And, you know, that, I mean, the Homecoming title, like I said, not only is it just referring to the character itself, that Marvel has him back now. Marvel's doing this. It's their Homecoming. Okay. They've got an actor that they're solid with. That's a homecoming for the character. It's a homecoming for Peter learning about who he is now with these powers. The homecoming in that he kind of, the whole movie is the whole movie comes to a crest with the line that that Peter is not anything without the suit, and Tony saying, if you're nothing without the suit, you shouldn't have it.
Good stuff.
That's I mean, the epitome of the Parker conundrum that he goes through. And they knock it out of the park with it, you know?
I told you before, I have a hard time thinking of something I disliked about this movie. I've heard people get down on the kind of the twist, the hidden thing where Michael Keaton is the love interest's father.
I actually admit, I did not see that coming, and I don't know why.
I did
why.
Not either,
like,
man.
I just was like, oh, it is what it is. I was okay with it, and it made me, like, I actually did go, well, that makes sense.
But in that exchange in the car where they come to know who each other are.
The red light and the green light. He's seriously sitting at they're at a stoplight, and they flash to Michael Keaton's face when he's asking Parker a very specific question, and it's red. And as soon as Parker answers it, the light turns green. He gets the grin on his face, that smile only Michael Keaton can have. And he at that point, he knows.
And there's good, I'm glad you mentioned Tony. Like, I feel like there's good Tony, just even development here. Like, there's no real arc to him, but we see his other arcs, like, across all of the Marvel movies manifest here. Like, he's more involved. He's taking on the role of a father figure, whereas, you know, Iron Man 3 was maybe the most progress he's made in that area. He still didn't do it willingly. Like, here, Tony's a great character in this thing too. Yeah,
he's great. And I think that legitimately some of his best lines as Tony have come up from this movie and in relation to Spider-Man. And you know, this movie really, really does help. Yeah, I saw Infinity War before this, so and now I want to go back and rewatch it, because I want to see him crying over Peter.
Oh, do you? Because it's rough.
It's good. He doesn't feel so good.
I heard that though. I heard freaking, speaking of Tom Holland's performance, I heard that was pretty much ad-libbed in Infinity War. The way he goes out.
Yeah, I had also heard that the line was ad-libbed.
Yeah. I'm glad you saw Homecoming. It's a fantastic movie.
Really, really good. I fully am behind Far From Home. I hope it's awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. I like the setup at the end where Scorpion was there. So your dotted line, you know, depending on I did like that Shocker. They used Shocker. That
I was
cool.
Just gonna ask about Shocker. Yeah,
I liked how they used Shocker, and I liked that they've got a setup now where if the sequel is as they say and Mysterio is going to be the big bad guy, okay, I'm into that, because we're three of the Sinister Six and they can easily make a third movie.
I hope they're building towards that.
They've got to, right? Like, it's the only thing that makes sense is you've got two of the six already together in prison. Mysterio's next. You know, they can easily bring in two in the next movie, have Kraven show up or whatever, and then you just got two more.
Is Kraven? Is he original Sinister Six? I haven't seen him in recent iterations.
In the original Sinister Six, it was...
We're talking Silver Age, so yeah.
It was Doc Ock, Mysterio, Scorpion, Shocker. Oh, you know what? Maybe it was Electro. It wasn't Shocker.
Stay tuned. Yeah, cool.
I have to verify my original Sinister Six here.
Why don't you verify that in an unnaturally quick manner?
Okay, it's Vulture, Electro, Kraven, Mysterio, Sandman, and Doc Ock.
There you go. All right. At the very least, Google Kraven Garfield and love yourself.
And if you're bored after that, Google Garfield without Garfield.
Oh, now this is just completely off the rails. Sorry. Anything else this week, good sir?
Nothing else of note. All right. I think that's it.
Okay. I don't believe you. I'll check back with you when I'm done.
Okay.
So I teased this a little bit, probably definitely at PAX, but I think a little bit before actually. I watched a movie that's been on my list for a bit. It's been on just kind of in the me and my wife going to watch this sometime queue because I remember liking it. And boy did I Air Force One.
Sure. Harrison Ford, great movie.
Fantastic movie, really good movie. Just one of those movies where I could see people taking issue with it. It's very overly patriotic.
Well, it's a Jack Ryan movie.
Essentially that is a very good comparison. Which I wrote down initially Jack Ryan, if Jack Ryan was freaking hardcore.
Right.
But that's kind of Patriot Games anyways. I think the character of Jack Ryan is maybe where the difference is drawn, because he's a CIA analyst made operative who, you know, fish out of water, gets it done. This is why Harrison Ford was so good. Check out our I think I did a Clear and Present and Patriot Games.
I think you
talk.
Did. Yeah. Yeah.
Air Force One is hardcore. it's more brutal, let's say. And I've come to realize once I watched this movie, I was like, okay, who directed this thing? Friggin' Wolfgang Petersen.
Wolfgang.
Who, yeah, the number one movie you're going to hear about most often, I feel like, is Das Boot. Another film that popped up in film school.
Sure.
It's been that long since I've seen it, so I don't feel great talking about it.
Jürgen Prochnow, very good.
Yeah, that's maybe all you need to say anyways.
Jürgen Prochnow.
Air Force One is a ton of fun because it is this kind of hyper-patriotic president that you get to root for in an action sense, you know. So it's got kind of that wish fulfillment, that Bill Pullman ID4 wish fulfillment, you know.
Bill Pullman.
But it's still brutal. Like, people still get shot in the head, you know. This is rated R. There's F words in it, you know, like
that right there.
The president doesn't say them, but he does very forcefully tell the guy to get off his plane.
No ticket.
The no ticket moment of Air Force One.
Yeah.
He's got a real through line, that Harrison Ford.
He never stops.
But Air Force One, way more fun than I remembered, and it sent me down a hole.
Who was the bad guy? It was Gary Oldman, right?
It's Gary Oldman, yeah.
Always good.
That had to get off the plane. And then they go into, I guess if I had an issue with the film, it would be that the movie doesn't end there. Then they have a whole nother tense situation where he has to land the plane while it's run out of fuel or has run out of fuel or something like that.
Sure.
So it's still engaging. Like, that's the thing about that movie, is that it's a thrill ride in every sense of the word. Like, it nails it. The pacing is perfect. It just is. So super solid. found out the director and was like, okay, I think it's time we went down a Wolfgang Peterson rabbit hole.
Sure, sure.
And I'm going to mention these in the order in which I watched them, not the order in which they were made. But since it all kind of congealed into overall thoughts on Wolfgang Peterson, I think it works out either way, and it helps me think about it. So, Enemy Mine.
Dennis Quaid, Louis Gossett Jr. Amazing movie. I love Enemy Mine.
Oh my gosh, that movie.
That's a cool movie.
And I think we're going back to the 80s here, so.
I haven't seen that in a long time.
It is good. It's not good in like when you, oh my gosh, that movie's so weird. I don't know how somebody conceptualized it to begin with and sold it to anybody. It's so bizarre. Like, you could say maybe the vision outpaced the ability because the special effects don't hold up. Like, it looks like an original series Star Trek episode a lot of the times because they're on a, you know, trapped on a planet. But the essential story that they're at war with this alien species and Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr. playing the alien, which I forgot his name now. This is 2-3 weeks ago. End up on this planet together.
His name is Drac.
Drac, thank you. And I mean, the elevator pitch is that they become friends. You know, they learn things about each other's race that informs the war at some point and all that stuff, etc. That is palatable. The way they do it is just so strange. Like, they quadruple down on this relationship thing. Like, they, not only do they become friends, they essentially have a kid together.
Yeah, yeah. They have a little Drac.
And we cover like a lot of space here, but yeah, the dude, like, their Drax are asexual, so
it had something to do with them shaking hands or something, didn't it?
Whoa, whoa, whoa! You're telling me that that's his literal other kid? Like I meant emotionally, like within the confines of this movie, they basically have a kid together.
Oh, maybe I might be construing other things. I haven't seen this movie in a long time.
Actually, they have a kid together.
I could have sworn that there's maybe I'm thinking of a different movie that they they get pregnant from touching hands.
It's blowing my mind.
I love
this movie.
Little baby Dennis Quaid, like, though.
Here are my freaking notes, right? Okay. The special effects are iffy. There's some space stuff and the planet looks kind of crazy. And there's the aliens are freaking Muppets. Louis Gossett Jr. looks good. Better close up, actually, maybe. Like, they do some crazy things with the prosthetics. That stuff's good. And it's obviously good because they're doing some character work here. There's no action like in Air Force One and coming off of Air Force One, especially, you know, me being like, let's watch Wolfgang Peterson movies. Like, there's very little, if any, action in this thing that I would classify as action. It is literally, like I said, they're quadrupling down on this emotional stuff. And then, yeah, in my notes, I just have written, holy crap, holy crap. It's so bizarre. The lengths that they went on this thing. Eventually, their kid gets kidnapped and he gets okay. So he goes and rescues the kid. And there is, you know, the races do come together at that way. But there's no payoff, like, I can't remember if they say the war ends or something. There's even like a tag at the end or something. Oh, I looked up reviews on this thing, and the Roger Ebert one was pretty explanatory in that it says, quote, made no compromises in its art direction. Sure.
Made compromises in every other department.
Yeah, that's literally the rest of it. It says made no compromises in its art direction, its special effects, and its performances, and then compromised everything else in sight.
I am basically Roger Ebert.
You are. It's great. I got to keep moving on these. Okay, then I watched The Perfect Storm.
Oh, yeah. George Clooney.
Yes.
Marky Mark. And
William Fichtner.
William Fichtner. I love William. That guy is amazing.
He's good.
He's always
good. He's not a CEO in this movie, is the weird thing.
That is weird.
He's kind of a ripped shore, like a mechanic, something. I don't know. They're all from The Deadliest Catch.
Yeah. John C. Reilly is in that one, too.
He is also, doing a dramatic role.
And a three namer. She's got a three name. Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Yep. From the Abyss.
From the Abyss.
The only thing I
knew. She went from the Abyss to The Perfect Storm. Who knew?
In whatever, like 20 years, it's still a significant time period between. I think we're 90s at this point. Actually, we might be 2000.
She was in the Abyss the entire time.
Okay, fair enough. The first 5 minutes of this film are super cool. Like the characters come across almost immediately, the way that Peterson handles it. And there's also the way they connect is almost Spielbergian in a way, which this is at the point in watching his movies, I was like, is he kind of just Spielberg who's willing to show blood and cuss words? Like Peterson's giving us popcorn movies. When he does The Perfect Storm, he kind of gets this cast of characters together. They come together beautifully, and it kind of falls apart. It's based on a true story.
Man, does it ever.
I mean, both the movie and the story.
Yeah,
like everybody dies, basically. There's a cool grizzled sea captain at the bar where the family is waiting to hear about news from the ship and stuff like that. And there are, some real thrill rides, where the story falls apart, the direction and the editing still sing. Like the minute to minute, even if you're like, well, this doesn't make sense because of this one stupid thing. The minute to minute, you're like, oh crap, you know, like the Coast Guard's running out and doing this thing, and you know it's not coming together like exactly the true story, but they're putting it together in a way that's way more entertaining type thing.
Right.
The character of the captain doesn't completely land for me because they try to romanticize a lot of what. It's kind of the opposite of Captain Phillips. Was that the Tom Hanks one?
Yeah.
Where they completely romanticize him, and he's actually a total garbage person in real life.
Yeah, he's kind of a jag.
Yeah. The guy in real life is not a garbage person in this instance, but in the movie, they basically turn him into Ahab to the point where he's over the top and kind of putting everybody else in danger. And they do romanticize it, and, you know, like the sea and stuff like this, but it doesn't quite come together,
right?
But it's fun. It's a good movie. It's maybe the bottom of all of these. No, actually, no.
Well, now I'm curious what else you watched.
Yeah, it's not the bottom of this list, but yeah. So the next one I watched then was Poseidon.
Yeah, that's definitely, it's got Kurt Russell in it, so that's got one thing going for it, but then it just goes downhill after everything about it.
I mean,
I actually enjoy the movie because I do genuinely like the cast of that movie.
It's a great cast. Again, yeah, Kurt Russell, Emmy Rossum, Emma?
Yeah, Richard Dreyfuss is in
it. Richard freaking Dreyfuss. Which he at no point does he make a reference to the size of the boat, which it's a really big boat. Maybe that's why, because they didn't need a bigger boat. I don't know. I was kind of hoping for something.
I also Captain Holt. Isn't it?
Captain Holt is literally the captain.
He's the captain.
And he's just one of the best parts. Not only does the boat go down and he's like, everybody stay in this ballroom because the boat capsizes because of a rogue wave, which is literally a rogue wave. Like, especially coming from The Perfect Storm, where a rogue wave happens in the middle of a storm. This one just happens. Like, it's just a tidal wave in the middle of the ocean that capsizes the boat. And
nothing else ever occurs. Nope. They're just like, this wave was like, hey, get out of the way.
I'm roguing here.
I'm roguing over here. It's a roguelite. We're a roguelite ocean.
And then dumps him over. But yeah, Captain Holt's down in the ballroom with Fergie. Is the entertainment. I don't know if she's Fergie in the movie, but she's Fergie in the movie. And Captain Holt's like, no, you crew of survivors that we're going to follow for the rest of the film, don't leave the ballroom. And if you do, you're going to die. Those guys leave the ballroom. It's Josh Lucas and, like I said, Emmy Rossum. There's a mom and a kid. And Kurt Russell is the dad of Emmy Rossum and her fiance. But then when everything goes to crap and Captain Holt is, of course, proven wrong, everybody dies, like him and Fergie hug each other, and then that's how the ballroom dies.
that's how the music died.
It's beautiful. But actually, yes, that movie, I remember not enjoying it. It's the second time I've seen it since it came out. I think I saw it and enjoyed it way more. Like, again, sure, there were incredibly tense moments. In fact, I would say The Perfect Storm is probably a better movie than this, but there were tenser and more, I think, well-executed moments in Poseidon that were surrounded by a kind of junk.
Yeah, no, it's got a lot of padding.
But I would still recommend it, actually.
Yeah, it's fun.
And then it came time for In the Line of Fire.
That's just straight up a good movie.
It is. Are you surprised to hear? I was surprised to hear about some of these movies were his.
Well, I'm surprised that you didn't bring up The Neverending Story and showed your kids. Got them all depressed as all hell.
I've watched it recently, so I left that off this list. But I was also surprised to find out he directed that. I had no idea.
Yeah. You know, when you see that movie and you think about The Nothing, I automatically think of Wolfgang Peterson now.
In the Line of Fire was another one where I was like, I love this movie. I've always loved this movie. Oh, it's a Wolfgang Peterson film.
Yeah.
Not quite, you know, the never ending story, but hey, I mean, it's 2 hours and something minutes long, so it gets up there.
There are not as many horses that die in this movie, that's for sure.
You're right. Super fun movie. Clint Eastwood and Rene Russo do a great job together, have a great chemistry together.
Malkovich is great, too.
Some maverick of a casting director made Malkovich a man that wants to kill the president, an unhinged man that wants to kill the president. And yeah, he knocks it out of the park.
I love there's the sequence where, and I feel like it's the first time you see the gun, the plastic gun, and he kills a security guard or something. But he's like sitting somewhere and he just shows the guy the gun and then he shoots.
Oh yeah.
Him.
Oh no, it's a hunter. He kills a duck with it and then the hunters. Oh no, he shoots it just to test it.
That's
doesn't
it.
Doesn't kill
yeah.
anything. And then some hunters come up and are like, "What the heck are you using?" He's like, "Oh, I made it myself." And they're like, "Oh, can I see it?" And he's like, "Yeah." And he gives it to him and they shoot a duck and then they give the gun back to him and say a couple more words and then he shoots them. Or he shoots the first guy in the head and the other guy's like, "Why'd you do that?" And he's like, "Why'd you kill that duck?" And then shoots the other guy. So plenty of great writing, yeah. Plenty of great moments. The one thing, and Clint Eastwood's character is perfectly realized both by him and
for
I think
sure.
the writers.
Yeah, I absolutely buy him as a Secret Service agent,
dude,
by the way.
And a grizzled one. Like
yeah,
this,
for
the,
sure.
The beginning to this movie might be the best of any Wolfgang Peterson film, actually, because it's him and freaking, the dude, he was in a sitcom.
Yep, Archie Bunker.
Again, you're describing a movie I want to see, but no, it's Dylan McDermott.
Oh man, he's great. I like Dylan McDermott.
Well, he's good, but also he's a total like. And this is the thing about Wolfgang Peterson films. This is the through line, really. Dylan McDermott plays a kind of a new guy that Clint Eastwood takes under his wing in a way that you can imagine Clint Eastwood doing. You know, he's gruff, but he's got a heart of gold.
Sure.
Even though I think there's actually some development here to his character that you don't see in a lot of Clint Eastwood films.
Sure.
You know, like Dirty Harry or something like that. Mm-hmm. But the newbie comes in, taken under his wing, and. I mean, first of all, the movie begins with this great sting operation where Clint Eastwood walks in. They're both playing undercover, and in fact, I don't even want to ruin it. Just go watch the beginning of In Line of Fire. It's a fantastic beginning. But that event shakes Dylan McDermott's character to the point where he almost quits, and then Eastwood brings him back in, you know, in a loving Eastwood way. And then they still kill that dude. Like, the dude's got kids. Like, he wanted to leave the FBI. And Eastwood's like, no, like, stay in the FBI. Like, you know, your family's important too, but stay in the FBI. They'd still kill him.
Heck yeah.
Like, this is a Wolfgang Peterson film. If the dude you care about could die to progress the story, he's going to die.
Yeah. Wolfgang Peterson is the original Robert Kirkman.
I guess, man. He is. It was brutal. It's brutal was the word I kept writing down over and over. But yeah, Clint Eastwood's character is really solid, minus all the winking. They surpass the wink limit in this movie by a country mile. Like I mean, the lines he said should be done with a wink, quote unquote. Maybe not with an actual wink, like he does, you know, four times.
He unfortunately reads it like Christopher Walken. You know, he's like literally winking at
yes.
people.
He reads the Rileys in the script. You know, the ones like. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll keep going. I feel like I've been talking forever. The next one I watched, the last one I watched. Are you ready?
Is that what it's called?
Have I left? No, it's not.
Oh.
But you might be surprised. This is another one I didn't know he did. Outbreak.
He really liked Rene Russo for a time, eh?
Yeah, this is when he got held up on, which, to be fair, I did as well at this point.
I think a lot of people did.
I was very.
Thomas Crown Affair.
Held up on Rene, yeah.
Other movies that she was in, Lethal Weapons.
Thomas Crown Affair is funny. I got in trouble for going to see the Thomas Crown Affair. Because my parents didn't understand that it's a British remake, I think, right? Or it's at the very
yeah.
least it's a
remake of a
yes
Steve
affair
McQueen.
In
Steve,
that
Steve McQueen was Thomas Crown in the original and
really oh that's
Pierce
cool
Brosnan
I'm gonna check that out
in this one
yeah but my parents didn't understand that affair was being used as a you know an event like you know
yeah.
An affair to remember so I got railed for going to see a porno basically.
That makes sense.
But the outbreak, again, brutal. You see, like, the freaking people dying, bloody deaths all over the place. and they have to quarantine off this one town, and there's a couple guys that try to escape in their pickups, and I'm like, oh, they're getting shot. Like, they're civilians that are bucking against the government that's imposed this thing on them. So there's any other movie, it would be like, you know, when there's civilian deaths, it's a huge deal. I knew they were going to die the second they tried to get away. And sure enough, you know, they are gunned down by a helicopter and their truck explodes.
Yeah, it's basically the beginning to The Running Man, except Arnold Schwarzenegger actually completes his job.
But another solid movie. In fact, I would put, like, after all these things, I would put, I would put Outbreak. Air Force One's still top of the list. Sure. Nothing really topped that after I saw it. But Outbreak and In the Line of Fire, just barely below Air Force One. And Wolfgang Peterson.
That's fair.
Das Boot probably still at the top. Again, it's been a while, but I feel like if I'm not going to talk about it here.
No, and you can't. I mean, Das Boot is a podcast on its own.
It is, really. In fact, that could be a show. But Wolfgang Peterson, a fantastic rabbit hole to fall down. Highly recommend it.
Sure, sure.
I do have one other movie.
Okay.
I'm sad to say.
All right, hit me.
You can time me on this. 1 minute. This doesn't deserve longer than a minute.
All right.
I saw Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
All right, I'm turning off the recorder.
The trailer for this movie was horrible. I hated it. It used the music in a stupid way. All of the beats it tried to portray looked stupid.
This is the most recent one, right?
Yes, this is the most recent one. I watched Jurassic World. I liked Jurassic World.
Okay,
period.
that was the first one with Chris Pratt.
Correct.
Got it.
And in retrospect, this movie, I think, has me realizing that, because I liked Jurassic World because it did manage to call back to a lot of the Jurassic World themes. Like, you enter the movie through a pair of kids that are going, their parents are going through a divorce. You know, it's... But anyways, Jurassic, have I gone over a minute yet? In retrospect, I see now, was good maybe by the skin of its teeth or by some chance happening more often than not. Again, very good, and I recommend it. Thoroughly enjoyable movie. This movie did not pull it off in any sense of the word. It cribs from Lost World in the weirdest ways. Jurassic Park 2, essentially. Do you remember it's the one where they made a big deal about the dinosaurs still existing and people needing to save them, and then they brought them back on a boat and they got free in the States?
Yeah, again, is this Vince Vaughn? Was that it? No? Is that the third one?
No, that was the third one.
Yeah,
still a better movie than this one.
Yeah,
this is the worst Jurassic Park. There you go.
Oh, all right, done.
There's just no newness to it. They rehash old stuff. The A to B doesn't make sense. Like, the motivations are bad. They bring back stuff from Jurassic World. Like, they're trying, there's a couple good things. One of them is Blue the raptor, and I like that they're relying on her relationship with Chris Pratt and how he brought her up, but they freaking fumble that too. Like, the raptor cries at one point, and then at the end, when Chris Pratt is like, oh, I'll save you, Blue. Blue's like, nope. And he looks at the cage, walks away. And then as he's walking away, speaking of Line of Fire, In the Line of Fire, has a moment where he looks back and is like, basically, you know, salutes the camera.
See you later!
And then walks off into the floor. Oh my gosh, all of it's stupid. It's just dumb. Don't go see the movie.
No. I don't really enjoy those movies, so it's not a hard one for me to skip.
I feel like you would enjoy Jurassic World, but this
I
one...
I don't think I would.
Let's put it this way. Is bookended by Ian Malcolm. You know, Jeff Goldblum makes a return in this thing.
Of course he does, because if he died in the story, that would be ridiculous.
The movie is bookended with his comments. That's his only appearance in the movie, wherein he kind of, you know, he talks about some of the stuff he talked about in the first movie. He doesn't specifically mention chaos theory, but if you know what he's talking about, you know that's what he's talking about. But in the end, it becomes this weird meta commentary on people standing on the shoulders of giants. This movie stood on the shoulders of giants without ever wondering if it should, you know? Like, it's bad. Don't go see this movie.
Yikes. But hey,
And then it ends with a great premise, Matt. The ending of this movie, because there's a will she, won't she with Bryce Dallas Howard, where she has to decide to kill the dinosaurs that are loose in America or let them go. And she decides to kill it. But then John Hammond's brother's cloned granddaughter presses the button anyways, and the dinosaurs are released into the United States to roam free and not recaptured, because the movie ends with that premise that now it's actually a Jurassic World, and the world has to contend, or the United States has to contend, with loose and free roaming dinosaurs.
Whatever, man. That's so easy.
But that's a better movie than this one.
You know, it's a better movie when the movie was already, when it was made and it was called 12 Monkeys. Like, that was a better movie.
No, okay.
You know, take the instead of it being wild animals, you just make them dinosaurs.
Well, they're going to screw up this idea anyway.
Dude, well, it sounds like they already screwed it up. So
that's all I got.
Instead of watching screwed up movies, stick with us. Book Club for Movies, our selection this week. It's quality. It's good. It's fun. It's Smokey and the Bandit. It's on Amazon Prime streaming right now. Go check it out. Love the mustache. R.I.P. Burt Reynolds. We'll be back next week with Smokey and the Bandit. Until then, cut.
Westbound and down, 18 wheels are rolling. Are we going to do what they say can't be done?
Is that how movies are done? Like, they go cut, and then there's like a...
And it's not how Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is done. Nobody at any point yelled cut during that movie. And then what they do is they keep doing it.
Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana. And we'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Westbound and down, 18 wheels are rolling. Are we gonna do what they say can't be?